next is Paige Clausen.
Senator Woodsum and all the members of the committee, thank you for having me here. My name is Paige Clausen. I'm coming from the town of Islesboro, and that's where I am a member of our team that is implementing a fiber to the home project for the entire community. And I'm also a small business owner. I'm coming here today more of my own to share my own personal thoughts, some of what I hope to be able to do over the course of the session, depending on what legislation goes through, is to be able to share some thoughts and lessons learned, which plenty of them have been hard-learned lessons in trying to put a project like this in place. Our project really started in 2012, and we're hoping to get the service active this fall. And we're looking at connecting all properties. It's about a $3.8 million project. And we're looking at providing gigabit service to all of our property owners at $360 a year for this service. On the journey of this, I've learned a lot of lessons. Some of it is listening to a lot of the conversations. It seems to revolve around economic development. And for me, it's come to be where it's not really about economic development. It's come to be looking at the internet access for everybody is a required utility. And there's certainly a different mindset that goes with that, especially when it comes to the tough choices of funding and so on. One thing we did a lot of modeling to try to figure out how we could fund our project, because that is a real challenge for a small community to pay for such a system. And at the end of the day, we figured out that it was going to work well if we took out bonds, sold bonds for the capitalization to build the project, and then we used that would be, of course, paid with property taxes. And then the user subscriber fees is what's going to pay for the operation and the maintenance of the project. I think that's something that can help in a lot of other environments. It's a sort of a municipal solution, and that wouldn't be the case for everybody. Not everybody would want municipal solutions. However, some of the problem, I think, in the state is we have small enough population. We're never going to have multiple lines to every house. And if we really want to see competition, every house and every business, if we really want to see competition, I think there's going to be a single line to the house, and then it's the service providers on that line is where the competition is going to come from. And I think a lot of the dialogue that I've seen over the course of the years is there's talk about fierce competition, but it's really, from my view, more of a monopolistic type business that's competing for majority market share so that their business model can succeed. And I think that's something that I hope the committee looks at as they move forward with looking at some of the bills of how might municipal networks play a part, and how might the funding go to putting infrastructure in place that can then be competitive for the end user and the businesses. There's a few other things, but I'm running out of time. I'd say at the end of the day, so far what I've learned, we're just coming into the make-ready process of the poles, but certainly the whole pole access problem, I think that is the major problem. I think that's bigger than finding the funding for people. I think it's I guess I'd leave it there. I'm out of time, but I'd say that's the biggest issue I see that could be addressed to really move the state forward, and obviously most challenging.
Yeah. Can you explain to the committee where is Islesboro?
Yes, Islesboro is an island off the coast in the Penobscot Bay. It's right off of Lincolnville, Camden, Belfast area. Yeah. It's 3 miles out. We're about 10 miles long. We have about 600 people year-round, and in the summer it goes up to about 2,000.
Okay. And give us an idea of the poles issue you're talking about.
Poles issue, it's a long story for sure. I think at the end of the day right now for us, there's a couple of key pieces. One of them is, as we came into this, we're a municipal network, and there's no legislation saying we can be on the poles. We don't have legislative access, so we rely on the attachment agreements. So essentially, you know, that sort of an arrangement is at the mercy of the pole owners. And we don't have protections under the PUC and so on. So that's one real challenge. So far for us, fortunately, we haven't run into troubles with that, short of lots of delays and costs, and, you know, it drags on, and we can do nothing but go along for the ride. But
What does it cost? Do you have any idea on trying to get onto those poles?
Yeah. I'll back up briefly and then get to that question as well. Right out of the gate, when we wanted to do the design so we could go, you know, get our arms around what this project's going to cost, we had to figure out where all the poles were. And, you know, we wanted to try to look at the maps from the electric company and the phone company, and we were allowed access to that. So right out of the gate, we had to go spend $50,000 just to go survey the poles to figure out, you know, what it's going to take to build a system. And that's something, those resources are already there. If those could be shared, every community that's doing that would be saving that kind of money. Now, on the other side, the make-ready costs, I know they're going to be near a $600,000 range for us on a $3.8 million project. And some of that is, you know, work that just has to happen on the poles. But there's other costs in there too, legal fees and other costs that could come down for sure. And some of what's changing now too, from what I understand, I mean, I'm just learning with this, but it sounds like a year or several years back, it used to be with CMP in particular, who we're dealing with for power, they would do the make-ready estimate, and then there would be some negotiation back and forth and figure out who's responsible for everything. It sounds like now, I guess since corporate buyout, the changing culture inside the organization, it sounds like basically the answer comes to us, here it is, and you pay it. And we have no real recourse from that, from what I understand. If we really wanted to, we could go to the PUC and try to, you know, try to do some sort of claim there. But it's challenging.
Yeah. What were some of the other challenges? I mean, this is a community-based project, and I mean, did you have to go through the hearings? And, I mean, it's $360 per person, per household. How does that work?
Well, there's a variety of answers in that. I mean, the challenge is, yes, it was a large challenge, but we did a lot of work and are still doing a lot of work to stay heavily in strong communication with the community, constantly informing them of what we found, where we're going, what the next step is. And that's part of, in the first couple of years, that's how we formed our solution, because we would come up with an answer, we'd go to them, and we'd get feedback about, well, we don't like this, we don't like that, we go try again. So that certainly, I think, was a lot of our success early on, is a lot of communication with them and working with them, and then that's where we came to the model of sharing the costs. So you were asking about the costs and how it works. The $360 a year is what we're going to be offering for the internet access, gigabit to every house up and down. And what's going to happen is the town is going to own the infrastructure, and the town will contract with GWI to operate and maintain the system. The town obviously doesn't want to be in that kind of a business. And also GWI will offer phone services through the internet devices as well. So the $360 a year is for the internet, and if they want to have phone, that would be separate with GWI. And the way we're working it, the $360 is for the subscriber fees, the capitalization, the bonds. That is going to be through the property taxes, and every year at town meeting, which of course starts with the committee and then budgeting and then the select board, then it goes to town meeting, and that's where the actual balance of how those costs are shared is determined each year.
Now, the schools, are they on that three-ring binder? Is that included in your area?
Yes, sort of. The three-ring binder goes right up the coast on Route 1, and we need to get from the island to Route 1. And we've gone through some gyrations with that, where originally when we started the project, we were planning on microwave links to the mainland with some redundancy. In case one failed, the other one would pick up and keep the system running. And those would connect to the three-ring binder and then go off to GWI from there. And then during the course of the project, it came to our attention that CMP was pulling a new power line across the bay, and they would pull fiber. And so we were set to use that fiber. And just recently, something came back to us from CMP. They ran into problems that they weren't able to extend an agreement to us. And we're not able to be in the middle of that conversation that's between them and the easement holder. So the short of that is right now we're going back to the original plan of doing the microwave links. And literally today on the drive here, I was on the phone working out some of the questions with that. But what we're going to do is go across the bay and then connect to the three-ring binder with some radio equipment. We just need to figure out where it's going to locate on the mainland.
Any questions? Yes, Representative Cooper.
Thank you. Are you aware of any other municipalities or communities that have done anything like what you're doing?
Well, in the state, as far as I'm aware, we're the first that is a town that is doing universal access, meaning every house is going to be connected. Sanford is in the process of doing a project now, and Holton, I think, has had more of a private effort. I think it's Pioneer Broadband that has done something up there. And then Rockport, they have a small section as well. So there are some communities doing it, but we're the first ones that just basically said, hey, this is a utility, everybody's getting it, and we're going to partly tax subsidize it to make sure that we can afford to put it in place, because that is the major barrier, is coming up with the capital to build it.
And you dealt with that through bonding?
We did. Mm-hmm. We did. And that's part of the issue, from my understanding. Part of why things aren't moving forward is the business models for the incumbents. They need a much quicker return on investment, and that means then much higher rates, and the customers can't afford those rates. And where our bonding is on a 20-year period as opposed to like a 5 to 7-year period, I believe. I'm not sure, but I believe that's what the incumbents are needing. So over a 20-year period, we can put much lower rates. We pay more in interest over the time, but it's much more affordable to put in place.
On the poll issue, this CMP demanded bonds for use of polls, or haven't you even gotten to that point yet?
Well, yeah, we've gotten to that. There's, and I probably am not going to be entirely accurate with this, but there's an attachment agreement, and in there you have to do certain things of showing insurance and so on. But there's also a lease agreement. You rent each poll per year.
Mm-hmm.
So those agreements are in there.
Because I represent Long Island, and they had put a bunch of American flags on the CMP polls, and they wanted $1 million bond.
Yes, it is $1 million requirement on the insurance. That's yes.
Any other questions for the gentleman? Thank you.
I thank you, and hopefully we'll have the chance to come back again share the lessons learned.
All right.
Thank you.
Don't run off, okay? I'd like to speak to you.
Sure.
Is there anyone else? That's all I have on my list.
Can I ask Deidre a question, please?
Yeah. What?
Putting me on the spot, huh?
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Over 3 minutes.
You can give me
3 minutes.
Oh, I thought
seconds. You were going to give me 3 minutes, Representative. No, I came in late
okay.
to your presentation, sir. But this whole poll attachment issue has come up. In the past, it was for this town of Falmouth. Remember when they went through the whole municipal lighting piece. And I know with some of the bills that are coming up, we're going to visit that. There are real complicated property interests involved in the poll, as well as liability issues in terms of who has access and how. So do you think over the next couple weeks you could put together just a grid chart outlining some of the articulate factors involved in poll, I'll call it the poll property issue?
Sure.
Because the further down you go closest to the ground, the less interest anybody has in it. But up above, it gets very complicated, and I think it would be a good reference sheet for the members of the committee. Thank you.
Representative Ragerson?
Yes, I just want to say that we did deal with that in the omnibus energy bill as far as municipal lighting.
Yes.
So that is a good place to start with the information.
Near the bottom of the document that I supplied, there's a web link which it lists comparisons of how different states are handling the poll attachment issue. So that would be, I think, a very informative way to take a look and see pros and cons, how things are being handled.
I think that would be helpful, but I'm asking the analysts as well, just so we know what's the story in Maine.
Absolutely.
Once we can wrap our heads around that, we can get brave and go see what they're doing in New Jersey.
Okay, any other issues? Yes, I'm sorry.
I would just note that I spoke to the public advocate about this, and I know he's working on it as well, so you may get some information that's useful from him.
Next committee meeting is Tuesday, right?
Yeah, next
biomass presentations for both the legislative biomass report and the EDAT report, and then also a update and presentation on the offshore wind project through the University of Maine system.
All right. This concludes the session for the day.